right, you're on the arms of a Glenn.
And John.
And, yeah.
James.
In the corner.
It's Veterans Day, and James is bro-betting the shit. He's got the beard. He's got full sleeve ink.
Don't forget the shoes.
He's got some fucking multicam Converse or those Altas.
Those are Altas.
The Altas. He's got a fucking beanie. He's got a multicam black plate carrier on. Happy fucking Veterans Day, James.
Yo, I'm going to Applebee's after this. Who's
drinking,
coming with
drinking
me?
A Monster.
Yeah, bro'd out.
He's going to Applebee's for lunch.
Is his name James or did he change it to Kyle?
Holy shit, Kyle.
Yo, it's bro. Brad.
All right. Yay. So, let's just get it over with. All right. To all of our brothers and sisters out there, happy Veterans Day.
Yes.
And, you know, thanks for doing what you do and for doing what you did. And remember, it's Veterans Day, not be a fucking douche day. So, you know, treat it appropriately.
Indeed.
You're right. And for my personal opinions on that, feel free to go check out my live from this morning. I had a small rant about Veterans Day.
Oh, did you?
I always do.
I'll have to go check it out. Yeah. I was like Memorial Day. That's my favorite day because I get it. Well, here's what I like. Here's what I like. Right? I like Memorial Day because I like to look at all the rants of people online who are like, it's not about veterans. It's about our dead brothers and sisters. So whenever someone says, thank you for your service on Memorial Day, I say, no, it was for me. It's for my dead brothers and sisters. And I'm like, hey, how about you just say,
slam veteran owned coffee.
How about you just say, thank you, man,
right,
for even giving a fuck at all, enough to even say what you said. Hey, if you don't mind, if you got a minute, I'd like to explain to you the difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day, just so you know. Memorial Day is for those who didn't return. Yeah. Veterans Day is for those who did. Cool? But thank you for caring.
Yeah.
Or be a dick.
Be a dysfunctional veteran.
And make sure that you freaking continue the stigma and the stereotype of, you know, who we are or whatever. There's that.
Yeah. All right.
Now that we got that out of the way.
Now we got that out of
public
the way.
Service announcement.
But honestly,
for the day.
Genuinely and heartfelt. Thank you guys.
Regardless of what you did, where you did it, or when you did it.
I don't give a shit where you went. I don't care what you did.
I don't even give a shit if you went anywhere.
I don't care about any of that shit. All right? I don't care about any of that. Thank you for your service. Genuinely.
Yeah.
The only day of the year I'm going to say that heartfelt. Thank you.
Yes.
There you go. You're
welcome.
I also enjoy on Instagram being able to look at the photos of everybody 20 fucking years ago.
God.
You know what I mean? That's my favorite.
Back before we were bald.
Everyone posting photos, like, whatever. You will see none of that on Instagram or Independence Training. But,
or Red Light Gear.
Or James.
Or James with the arms room. Sorry, guys, if you want to see us back then, jump in a fucking time machine and go back and see us.
There's been a couple of pictures of me from way back, but I don't post them on Facebook today. Usually for some other.
We're also still in, so I mean, there's well,
my ish.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're like sort of in. You're like the
National
Guard.
I'm part
of
the Advanced Girl Scouting crew.
The National Guard's like a non-committal relationship. You know what I mean?
No. Like there's for sure a commitment.
Oh yeah, but it's like there's like one foot in, one foot out kind of thing. You're like, I want to see you, but not a lot.
Yeah.
It's like that girl that abuses
I
wanna
you.
I want to
see
you,
but not every day.
It's like that girl that abuses you, and she only calls you at like 2:30 in the morning, and you're just like, all right, I got to
I should
do
say
this.
No.
See,
but
you take
I'm not.
You take like a 1 to 2 week really nice vacation together every year, right? And one weekend a month, she's like really nice to you. And then the rest of the month, she just blows you off.
She just ignores you.
That's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate, dude. That's actually pretty good. I like it.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometimes it's a horribly long vacation to a terrible location.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, sometimes she finds a way to extend it. We weren't supposed to do this. This is not the itinerary. Oh, so shit. All right. All right, what else? What else we got? Oh, we do have... On Veterans Day, I unfortunately have some bad news. We got to pull up this news story. Oh, sorry to everyone, too. There's no description in the Arms Room Facebook post because Facebook
is broken.
The reason for the it was late today is because for the last 15 minutes, I've been literally trying to write a description into the freaking video But it's literally writing it backwards. Like, it's possessed. It was
hilarious to watch.
Finally, I was like, forget it.
We're just like Hulk smash.
Fuck it. We'll do a live. Coast Guard suspends 4-day search for missing Air Force airman who fell out of plane into the Gulf of Mexico. U.S. Air Force Staff Sergeant Condiff, 29, was identified as a missing airman Sunday from the 24th STS. So, I mean, this is a pretty high-speed dude here. Yeah, he just freaking fell out of the C-130 somehow. They said they watched it. He had a good shoot. He completed deployments in Afghanistan. All kinds of good stuff in his resume. These LDS guys. See a lot of those guys, special operations. So, yeah. Bummer deal, man.
That sucks.
Yeah, so they searched like thousands and thousands of miles. Really sucks, man. That's a shitty way to go. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'd rather freaking eat in combat any day than get lost in the fucking ocean.
Yeah, alone.
Alone.
Just hoping you're not going to get eaten by sharks.
Well, and the worst part is you're like, isn't this what I'm supposed to be good at? You know what I mean? Like, dude's like beacons, combat, dives, master, and all that. Yeah, but you're like, shit. Like, I mean, there's only so much you can do. You know what
I
mean?
Yeah.
I'm not saying anything bad about the guy. It's just like, that would be a shitty way to die. You're like, shit, like, this is what we do, and I'm going to die like this? Sucks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're coming to you from the Air 500 Armor Studio. This month, we're talking about the Valkyrie plate carrier, which, James, go ahead and stand up, James. Give us a little modeling gig here. Oh, my goodness. Hearts are melting all over the world right now, James. All right, so there you go. There's the Valkyrie plate carrier. This one happens to be in multicam black. It's very slick. The big deal about the Valkyrie plate carrier isn't necessarily how it's made. It's not like a groundbreaking plate carrier. It's the fact that it is a U.S.-made plate carrier from Air 500 Armor.
Yep.
It's a really well put together and very comfortable carrier as well. I mean, it's a good carrier just on its own. But yeah, there's nothing like groundbreaking. Like, it also makes mac and cheese or something like that. Like, it doesn't do that. It does have a pretty sweet candy pouch up top.
Yeah,
so it's got the great kangaroo pouch, yeah. There, which
yeah.
I always like to stuff extra mags and shit in there.
Yeah,
but up top, cool. It's got the freaking candy pouch, which I love when people build in candy pouches. It's
right.
Glorious. Yeah, that's a good. That's a
what are pouch. Casualty cards? I put Jolly Ranchers.
Yeah,
in there.
Yeah, casualty cards. Whatever. He's hurt.
Here's a blueberry Jolly Rancher.
Jolly Rancher. Have a Jolly Rancher.
A Jolly yeah, Rancher, son. Yeah. Oh, I do have to mention our former show producer and current paramedic, Dave, made me the nerdiest of all nerd shirts for my birthday. So I did want to wear it to the show. It actually says Imperial Medical Corps on it. It's got a stormtrooper with a little symbol on his helmet. I don't know what the symbol is. On the back, it's fucking huge. It says Imperial Medic. Which is super nerdy. But the most nerdy part is my name is on it. So I think it's awesome, man. I love wearing shit that doesn't no one's gonna be like, are you a veteran? Happy Veterans Day. Definitely on Veterans Day, I try not to wear anything mildly related to making me look like anything because I want to deal with that.
Right.
Yeah. But anyways, it's also just a great shirt. And I realized I hung it up in my closet. I haven't worn it yet. This morning I'm looking at it like, oh man, I gotta wear that. On the show, right? So, memory of you, Dave. Thanks for making me really sure.
Good job, Dave.
Sick.
Fucking nerd.
Dark side.
All right. What else we got here? Man. Patrons. Don't forget our extra show last week for you $10 and above patrons was posted. Right? Did you post it? Yeah. What did we talk about? It was some good stuff. Something extra. It was more personal stuff, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, it was fitness.
Fitness, that's what we talked about. Yeah, actually, that was a really great show. Yeah, if you're a $10 above patron, you got to go check this show out. James actually taught me a lot about fitness and diet and just kind of healthy lifestyle and all that kind of stuff. We talked back and forth about, you know, how do we do that? Why is it important? Why is it important to us? Like, really genuinely, why is it important to us? How do we do it? James is a pretty fit guy, so he was talking a lot about, you know, what he does and why he does it. So, yeah, if you missed out on that show, man, definitely go back and check it out. It'll be up on the Patreon deal, so you got a lot of new Patreon. Go to our show and do the thing. Like, wherever you go to read the blogs and show reviews and all that stuff. So, Man, I had a freaking busy weekend, as you can tell by my roughly hoarse voice. Pretty much long freaking weekend. Did a day and a half long entangled handgun class with Cecil Birch from Immediate Action Combatives. We had a nice big class. It was tons of fun. People fought. People got slaughtered. People got murdered. People learned a lot. A lot of UTMs got fired. Sadly, a lot of people's guns got taken from them. People got slammed on the hoods of cars. People got thrown in, almost through the wall of the house. All kinds of crazy stuff happened. And man, these are damn good classes. If you ever have a chance to take one, take one. There's not a lot of people in the country genuinely teach like logical, practical, contextual classes like this. John just texted me on tagged me on something this morning on Instagram from another organization who's teaching stuff, or just that's not a well built class. That was just two guys scrambling for a gun. That's all it was. Like, there was no really positional control. There was no dominance.
There was zero control there on either party.
It was just
party.
Literally it two was. Guys scrambling for a freaking gun, yeah. Which is not, it's not what we're teaching. Yeah. Like, we spend a day and a half just doing concepts and techniques and pressure testing each individual one before we go into scenarios
to put it all together.
So it's not just Fight Club with guns, you know?
No.
Or else we wouldn't be able to talk about it.
Yeah, otherwise people wouldn't be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Right. Handgun, defensive handgun yesterday with low light, no light. Man, we were on the range for what, James?
14 hours
or something. It was a long day. It was another great class on a good group all day long, all throughout the night. Man, we had a damn good class. A lot of fun. A lot of handgun all weekend long. And here's the reality of the handgun, man. Most people just aren't spending enough time with their handgun. Everybody likes shooting rifles because they're good at it.
Yeah.
You gotta be pretty awful to not shoot a rifle well. Like from a static position or whatever, like a static target. I mean, it's pretty hard to totally screw that up. I'm not saying not make mistakes. I mean, everyone's making mistakes, but I mean like consistently not being able to hit anything with a rifle at normal distances. I mean, inside of a couple hundred yards, like
you pretty much got sucked.
Yeah, it's not really that hard. Handgun's way more difficult. And mm-hmm. There's a lot more that goes into it. Less points of contact, less short barrel, all that kind of stuff. And people need to spend more time with their handguns. Because that's what we're all carrying. No one's in here with a rifle. We're going to talk about rifles today, coincidentally, but it's like everyone's carrying
a handgun. I got one right there, but it's borrowed.
I guess you have an unloaded rifle with no optic on it leaning over there, but other than that, so it's just something to think about, man. If you're not spending a lot of time with your handgun, you're freaking out. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd say I'd train my handgun 4 times to every 1 time I train my rifle.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, at least, yeah.
At least, yeah.
For sure. All right. Red wire gear, on the go.
Speaking of rifles, ensure that your sling is mounted properly. Regardless of what your sling is, I know what I would prefer that you all had on your rifles, but I understand. So I am of the opinion that your sling should be mounted as far to the rear and as far to the front as possible to allow you maximum control of your rifle at all times in all situations. Also, if you have a sling that does not have hardware sewn on, you need to triple pass your buckles. So if you have to weave on a QD swivel or a flashhook or something, you need to triple pass those tri-glides to ensure that your sling does not come undone. For more information on that, I'll have my video up tomorrow. I'll actually have a good demonstration, and I'll show how to do those things. So, mount your slings properly, all the way to the rear, as far to the front as possible.
So, one note on the far to the front as possible thing, not all my rifles are not as far to the front as possible. Mostly because of other shit that's up there.
That's why I say as far as possible. Not all the way to the front, but as far forward as possible.
Okay.
Boom.
Alright guys, Red Wire Gear Moment brought to you by RedWireGear.com. Topic today: how to select optics for your go-to carbine or rifle. We're actually talking about carbines and rifles in one way, shape, or form in the next couple of weeks. So how to select optics. This becomes a big question for people, our students and our clients, both from the show and training, where literally, just in the last 3 days, I've had no less than 4 or 5 messages all these ones happen to be through Instagram, about how do I pick an optic for my rifle? What am I looking for? Which one do I want? So, first thing you have to figure out before you select an optic is context of how the rifle or carbine is going to be used. We had this discussion, I think it was last night. Yeah, we were talking about it last night. Because we were doing low light handgun, and I was talking about target ID, and because of the who's always in the course and a lot of carbine shooters and stuff, I also brought, even though it was a handgun class, I brought up the idea like, man, even with magnification, people have a hard time seeing with the brightest light at night. They have a hard time getting a positive ID on a target, really honestly, more than about 15 or 20 yards away, if they're using a red dot, or so they have any magnification, they can typically start to see about 50 or 60 yards away. And of course, a lot of this is based on the behavior of the target downrange and what they're actually doing. But if someone's just standing there with something in their hand to get PID on it, would be really damn tough with a red dot. So the context of things, like I was using that as an example because we had several law enforcement officers in class. I was like, man, if I had a go-to carbine for you guys, especially where one of the guys worked, I was like, dude, I would have a freaking low power variable on it. Because if I need target ID, I can't do that through a red dot. A red dot is nothing other than your eyeball with a red dot.
Yep.
That's all it is, right? So if I need to get positive target ID on something, I'm looking at that, especially in the darkness, and that was something he had to really consider. So let's talk about that kind of contextual thing. How do we figure out what we're going to do with our rifle? I mean, really, for me, rifles break down into two categories. That's it. A, I'm going to use it inside of structures,
yes,
primarily and mostly. Or B, I'm going to use it outside of structures, primarily and mostly. That's it. The structures thing is important because that automatically assumes it's going to be close range.
Yeah.
And if it's going to be close range inside of structures, red dot is what you need, right? Yes. For the most part. Now, you may have some other needs depending on what kind of structures you might be in. But for the most part, the typical user inside of structures, and this is law enforcement, military, civilian, anybody, a red dot is fast, mm-hmm. It's appropriate, mm-hmm. It's easy to use. Turn red dot on, you got a red dot.
It's literally stupid proof.
You don't need really anything else. Now, if we're going to sidetrack here for a second and go into the world of red dots and close range, there's a couple of things that we have to consider. One of the first things we have to look at is the size of the red dot that we want. I'm a big fan of a lot of field of view through my optic. I want as much field of view as possible. That's why I always love the EOTechs, right? Because they have a massive field of view. The reticles are really nice as well because they're purpose driven. So an EOTech reticle is a 65 minute of angle circle, which means that at 100 yards, a 65 minute of angle circle is gonna represent 65 inches. The average person, the average man, if you're looking at them, is about 70 inches or so. So if I put them inside the circle, then that person is about 100 yards away. If I'm looking at someone and it's just basically belt lined ahead, then they're probably about 50 yards away. If I look at someone and they're only taking up half the reticle, they're about 200 yards away, right? And so we can continue on with this process to use kind of a poor man's range finding reticle. Now, that works out really well if I'm going to use the reticle in that way. The other cool thing about it is that bottom part of the circle just happens to be the exact holdover that you need for a standard carbine length barrel with a 50-yard zero at close range or room distance engagement. So now instead of holding, dot.
Floating your dot somewhere.
Floating the dot magically 2.5 inches roughly over whatever it is you want to hit. You just go to the bottom of the circle and engage with that. Makes things really nice. And a lot of other companies and reticles have taken that over, right? The other nice thing about the EOTech reticle is its close range capability. I don't necessarily need to put the dot on what I want to shoot. If I'm close, I put meat inside the circle. And if meat is inside the circle, I'm going to hit it, right? As long as I do my part from a marksmanship perspective. So I always like that. I like the big field of view. I like the very narrow edges of the window. The actual metal frame was narrow enough that it didn't really impede other field of view. It was nice. The EOTech's kind of nice in the fact that you can put a magnifier behind it. Now, from a tactical perspective, right? I'm going to use that word kind of loosely here, but from a field dynamic tactical perspective, okay? magnifiers are not something I was ever a big fan of. I felt like they mostly just got in the way. It was extra weight. We didn't use them more than we did. There was a lot of things like that, right? What I found, however, recently that they became very advantageous was in like action style shooting matches. Mm-hmm. Because now if I'm close up, bang, 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 I can hit my red dot. But with 3 or 4 power magnifiers, especially the new mini magnifier from Vortex, which is super small, I can flip that thing back and forth. All of a sudden, I need to make a range engagement, a distance engagement, or I need better target ID on something. I can rotate that magnifier up. So again, if I like red dots, because most of the time I'm going to be in structures or close range, maybe I'm a patrol officer, for example, but sometimes I may have to make that long distance shot or get better positive ID on something, magnifier. It's an option. Not the best option for everybody, but it's out there. It's an option, right? You can get the twist-off mounts. You can get the flip-over mounts, which are the ones I prefer. You can get whatever you want. So that's a possibility. Other reticles that I've seen in red dots, other than the obvious typical red dot, are range-finding reticles within red dots. Like Primary Arms, for example, has some pretty cool reticles that they build. And sometimes you say Primary Arms, you're like, oh, fucking Primary Arms. Like, hold the phone, fucker. Because guess who bought the ACSS reticle from Primary Arms? Trigicon. It's kind of a big deal. Hmm. Like Primary Weird. Arms is good, especially with their reticles. They make some damn good reticles. And quite honestly, their optics are not that bad. Yeah. I have a Primary Arms I bought way back when Primary Arms really first hit the market. And a lot of their stuff is, you know, there's only like a few companies that are really making optics. And so a lot of their stuff obviously is rebranded from other companies who also make the same stuff as like whoever, say, HoloSun, whoever, right? They all kind of share the same shit, right? That all aside. When Primary Arms first came out, I bought one of their red dots because I thought it would be cool to have a nice little cheap red dot. I could throw in a 22 or something. If you remember, John.
It was your primary dot for years.
I put it on my primary AR-15 because I was like, cool, I want to see what a micro dot. At the time, the Aimpoint H1s, T1s were very brand new to the market. And I'm like, I want to see if I even like a micro dot.
Before I go spend $600 or $700.
Exactly. Before I drop big money on one of these things. Hey, let me get this Primary Arms. And I remember even when I got it, I was like, just throw it on a 22 later. It now happens to reside on a 22, but that's not because it's not a good optic.
Right.
It was on my primary carbine for, 4 years.
Yeah. At least. Oh, wow. Yeah. I had one on there as well.
Shit out of that thing. I used it for training. It was my primary gun. How's that freaking thing? And finally, really the only reason I got rid of it was because I got something a little bit better to put on it from Trigicon. We got some MROs from Trigicon. We did some work for Trigicon. They gave us some MROs, and I put an MRO in its place. And that's the only reason I got rid of that. It still works. It just rides on my M&P 1522 now, a little 22 carbine. You know, it's like they don't make bad optics. So you know, brand-wise aside, when you look at reticles, there are range-finding reticles for red dots. Now, these are BDC-type reticles, so bullet drop compensating reticles. So that means that they're going to be
specific ammo weight, specific barrel length,
caliber, everything. Yeah, specific.
You have to know it, and if you have something other than what it's set for, like the ACOG is a great example of it.
Yeah.
You know, the original ACOG was built for 18.7. Whatever, 20-inch.
Basically a 20-inch
M16, A4, A3. Running the, whatever the Marine Corps was running.
62 grain M855 was built for.
Is that what it was? Mm-hmm. Okay. So
the original one, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. And that reticle is spot on for that ammo, for that barrel length. Mm-hmm. Right. Now they've got other reticles and stuff now that are different with the 16-inch.
If you get a T831 M4RCO, right, which is built for the M4 16-inch shooting 62 grain MA55.
Yep. So and then if you don't have that ammo, you have to go out and take this reticle and shoot it at the distances you expect to shoot and learn how that BDC works for your ammo at those ranges. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, BDC is never my favorite reticle, unless I'm going to be shooting most of the shit close in. Like, if I'm going to be 300 and in, I don't mind a BDC. A Trigicon-style scope is perfect, right? Because it's like most of my stuff's going to be inside of a hundo, no problem, point of aim, point of impact. And if I'm shooting an 8 or a 5.56 or whatever, 200 and in, basically point of aim, point of impact, no problem. Inside of 300, I'm okay with BDC. Get outside of that. And you start struggling with BDCs because it's an unknown factor, it's an unknown measurement.
Now, let me take it back. It's a known measurement.
Right.
And you can measure it or get the information from the company, but it's not set to your stuff. So instead of being like, yeah, I'm going to hold, you know, 3.2 mils or whatever, it's like, yeah, I'm going to hold 1.5 of these little dashes, I think. And you can get pretty good with the BDC, but then the problem is, if I change anything about that, if I take that opted off, put on another gun, I change, you know, caliber, so to speak, if I change ammunition or anything like that, totally changes all those holdovers, which I have to now go out and totally recalculate, as opposed to just being able to look it up on my, you know, ballistic chart and go like, oh, instead of 3.2, I'm going to hold 2.4. Perfect. No problem. Right. So I'm not a huge fan of those, but I do.
They have their place.
I don't mind a closer range. They're really good for like an ACOG system, because you're like, hey, you want to give every basically intelligent to stupid, you know, military personnel an optic that they can freaking use. So you can go like, hey, man, if he's 400 yards away, hold on the number 4. If he's 600 yards away, hold on the number 6. If he's 800 yards away, hold on the number 8. And look, we even gave you some wind, which, by the way, has no measurement, but we gave you some wind. Okay, so if you hold to the left, if it's a left to right,
or this much wind,
if it's a left to right, and you're holding into the wind, and you fire, and you don't hit him, hold a little more. You know what I mean? Like, but then you can kind of get yourself a little reference put on it. And look, all those things in there actually do have legitimate measurements, right? Inside an ACOG, you know, the traditional like TA-31 type reticles or the RCO reticles, inside of those things, every single one of those dashes has an actual measurement. Look them up from Trigicon. I mean,
it comes in the book.
They're not exactly telling everybody that. They're not trying to train everybody on that as far as an individual, you know, soldier, sailor, airman, whatever, Marine. But as far as that's concerned, they're not getting all those measurements, but you can, right? So if you have one of these reticles, every single manufacturer doesn't accidentally put a reticle together. They know what the measurements, they know the thickness of the the duplexes, they know everything. They know everything. Every stanza, everything in there has a measurement. So you can get it from the manufacturer. Now, back to the whole red dot reticle thing. BDCs are okay for red dot reticles, especially if you're like shooting action matches, you're gonna be shooting out to 300-400 yards. It might be nice to have that, as opposed to trying to use the, you know, size of your dot as a range finding reticle or holdover, which you can do. A 2 minute of angle dot inside of a red dot is 2 inches at 100 yards, it's 4 inches at 200 yards, it's 6 inches at 300 yards, right? So now I know, okay, that thing, let's say at 300 yards, represents 6 inches. So, you know, that means the size of the dot at 300 yards is going to cover a 6-inch space. So now let's say I look at my ballistic data and I need to hold 18 inches high at 300 yards. Well, that's the size of 3 dots. Now I kind of have to, in my mind, look at the target and go, that's one, there's two, there's three. So I'm kind of stacking my dot over nothing and kind of guessing still, but it's a whole lot better of a guess than just randomly going higher, lower, higher, lower, higher, lower. Oh, good, I hit it. God, I see that kind of stuff all the time in competition. We don't allow it really in classes, obviously, because we're really focusing on the actual technique.
Yeah.
I see it all the time in competitions where people just like basically artillery rounds onto a target and they're like, yeah, I got a hit. And you're like, easy, tiger. You know what I mean?
Is it repeatable?
Is it a consistent thing?
Yeah.
So I can repeat it with another 50 rounds, right?
Exactly.
But so make sure that you're actually paying attention to what your reticle is. So even when you're getting a red dot, pay attention to the size of the reticle, the type of the reticle. You know, like, what does it do for you? That's an important factor. If you're looking at red dots, like I mentioned with the Eotex, I like the big field of view. However, the downside to the EOTech, the Vortex UH1s or Leupold LCOs or any of these really cool EOTech style holographic sights is that they're freaking huge, man.
Yeah.
They take up a lot of space and they're heavy. So you may not need all of that. And nowadays with some of these micro dots, micro red dots, having different reticles built into them, you're not just a slave to the simple red dot anymore. So that's really nice. When you're looking at putting a red dot, you're looking at all those factors. There's also some factors you need to look at, like all the different switches. How bright is the intensity? I'll give you an example. I don't give a fuck about 11 intensity settings. I don't need 11 intensity settings.
No.
I've never needed 11 intensity
settings. Seriously.
One of the reasons I like the MCO on my my rifle, my primary rifle, is MRO. I dig the Trigicon brand, right? I
love it. Yeah, and there's what, seven settings on there? Is that right?
There's six, but they're technically not even six. It's off, and then it goes like 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or something like that.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple night vision settings going the other direction. That's it. I like that. I'm like, I want it brighter. I want it not as bright. I want it dim. Right?
And there's a cutoff between every...
Very positive. Very positive.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Click,
it's like...
Click.
Oh,
click.
Like, okay, cool.
You know you're turning that dot.
Yeah.
So when I'm looking at red dots, I don't care about 11 freaking settings. I don't give a shit about
it. And I certainly don't need 11 different night vision settings.
No, definitely not that. Now, one thing that I'll say, like, I'm thinking about the MRO that I don't like. In fact, it's my biggest pet peeve about the MRO is their adjustments. The adjustments on it are pretty finicky. They're hard to tell the clicks.
Yeah, you have to be in a really quiet environment.
Yeah, you have to like have like your fine-tuned hands, you know what I mean? So you can feel each individual little click. Yeah, I'm definitely going to stand a chance of hearing that shit. So I could be in the quietest room in the world and I wouldn't hear that freaking thing click.
Yeah, because all you'd hear is...
Yeah, I just hear...
That tinnitus flaring up again.
Most of my fucking life. But I...
you hear that?
That's why like, I always tell people, like, I'm never alone. You know, like, you ever feel lonely? Nope. It's me and tinnitus.
Yeah, don't.
But I have... As I'm making those clicks... I don't like that they're not like covered. There's no, there's nothing. They're just open to the world. Yeah. Oh, hey, please come fuck with my red dot settings. So I don't really dig that. And I have had them not slip, but kind of gotten fudged out of the way. So I like a setting where, you know, I'm going to remove a cap. I'm going to make positive, solid clicks. And then I can put a cap back on and protect those adjustments, you know. So I do like that. I don't like that on the MRO. When it comes to other things like mounts, there's a lot of different mounts that you can get. Do yourself a favor.
Don't go cheap on your mount.
Get American Defense Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Call it a freaking day.
Yeah.
I have more ADM mounts on my guns than probably anything else. Right? I love ADM stuff.
I've got ADM.
Bomb-proof. I like the cuties.
I've had good luck with Midwest Industries too.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not saying ADM is the only one.
No,
the only one I have. I also have some Night Force stuff. I have Burris, Pepper, or Peeper, or whatever. That's a badass freaking mount.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of different mounts.
Cheap out on mounts.
Just don't cheap out.
Kind of the thing. The mounts that generally come with some of these optics are not. They're good enough, but there's better stuff available. It's like you paid them for the optical. They're going to give you a free mount so you can put it on your gun. It may not be the best option for how you've got your rifle set up because you've got lower third.
Full co-witness, lower third co-witness. Yeah. And that's just personal preference.
Yeah.
I would say there's not one that's better than the other. So the other thing about the mounts is, like I just mentioned QD stuff. I like QD on some of my guns, quick detach, because I am going to QD that optic. But QD is going to cost you more. And so if you don't need the QD feature, there's literally no reason to pay for it.
No.
You're going to get a much more for your money if you don't need QD and you don't buy QD.
Yeah.
So if it happens to be the mount you want comes in QD, well, that's fine. Most of mine are QD because that's the mount I wanted. That's how it comes. But there's only a couple rifles that I select where I'm like, I need QD on this gun because I'm swapping it from one scope to another. So battery life is another thing that I look at. For a go-to gun, I'd like to be able to leave the battery on or leave the light on or fucking red dot. That's what I mean.
Jesus.
Long weekend. Right? I'd like to be able to leave the optic on and look anytime I want to through that thing and see the freaking optic, right? So I don't want to have to be on, off, up, down, lots of different settings. Nothing. So look at the battery life. Also remember to administratively change your batteries from time to time.
And look at the battery. Look at the actual battery. Is it a proprietary battery? Because Aimpoint was real bad about that for a long time. They had this stupid, tiny little proprietary battery. Now, the battery in the optic had this phenomenal battery life, right? Like you put it on when you left on the deployment. And you left it on until the end of the deployment, and the thing supposedly still worked the whole time, even on its brightest setting. But it was still a proprietary battery, and if for some reason your cap came undone, your battery died, whatever, it was a pain in the ass to get a replacement. Right? So
look at common batteries. 2032s, double A's, triple A's,
123s.
123s. You know, look for something that's going to run on those if that's what you're going.
There's even some optics I have that, like, or lights or lasers, things like that, that run like the CR2, right?
Yeah.
It's like the CR2 is not an uncommon battery, but I do not stock them. I have a lifetime supply of triple A's and double A's and 123s. Not CR2s. You know what I mean? I keep a couple of them around because I have to.
Yeah.
But it's like, again, it is something to look at as the actual battery itself. And nowadays, I mean, dude, you might even look into some rechargeable options, especially depending on how you use your optic. It's not the worst thing you can do. You've got pretty badass freaking rechargeable batteries these days. Look at maybe getting into some of those, and that can do a lot of good for you. So, other things I'm going to look for in a red dot is going to be placement on the rifle. Now, a lot of guys will put the red dot really far forward on the receiver, you know, like almost to the end of the receiver. And most of the time we ask them in class, hey, why do you do that?
That's what someone told me to.
I saw it, man. That's, isn't that where you're supposed to put it? Now, the idea behind putting it farther forward is like the old scout mounts. And you'll see this, like my AK, for example, has the Ultimac rail. It's all the way up front. So you got the freaking red dot on the AK. It's all the way up there, right? The idea behind that is when I'm bringing the gun to bear, if I'm doing it correctly, bringing forend first and then stock, I'm going to see my optic faster. So in theory, then, I'm going to be able to engage quicker. Yes. Put it under a timer.
Nah.
It's very close. It's very close. Right? Now, for me, I'm not so concerned about that as much as I'm concerned about, again, field of view. So again, I prefer, even with my red dots, my micro dots, to mount them farther back on the receiver, more towards where I would put a rear sight or, you know, where the end of the receiver works towards my eyeball. Because now it gets behind my eyeball faster, not just out my vision faster, and also allows me better field of view. It's easier for me, personally, to shoot it more like a rifle when I'm trying to be precise if I have something closer to my eye with a larger field of view, which allows me to potentially see misses, etc., easier than if it's mounted forward, farther forward on the gun. That's just my own personal experience. The biggest reason for mounting it forward was for things like magnifiers and PVS-14 weapon mounts. Right? You take the PVS-14 and put on the rifle.
And originally, when the dots first came out, everybody was still running charging handles because it's the only rifles we had. There was a stupid gooseneck mount. We put the dot way out there. Mm-hmm. So there's also that.
Carry handles, what you said.
I said charging handles.
Yeah. We still run charging handles. Carry handles.
Carry handles.
Yes.
You know, fixed carry handles, yep. Not removables.
And so the gooseneck.
Stupid gooseneck.
Screw into the top.
Dude.
And it would go down over the front. And so it had to be there.
And it had to be out there. So everybody just assumed.
That's where it's best at.
That's where it goes.
Yeah. Well, and if you think even back in those days, right, we were even, you know, we had the optics mounts that would screw into the carry handle.
That you can still use iron sights through.
Yeah, so you could use the iron sights underneath it, or you could bring your head way the hell up. And even back then, for the old M4-style collapsible stocks, they had that clip-on. Yeah. They had that clip-on freaking cheek wrap. Well, we're dating ourselves, John.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just about to say, y'all, all right, y'all lost me.
Yeah, they had a clip-on cheek riser that you could clip on the freaking stock that would bring your head way the hell up. And basically,
so that little four-power optic that would sit way up.
Yeah, and it would put all the way up on top of the carry handle. Dude, you would almost have a chin weld on your freaking stock. But that cheek riser was like that tall, man.
Yeah.
You could put it on top of your M4 stock. You could actually rest your cheek pretty well. Then if you need to go iron, boom, you could go right back down and look through. And they were just as shitty as they were before, so you weren't really losing it.
There you go.
But it was like, back then, dude, that's what we had. You know? Now with all the cool flat top options and everything, it's simple to mount optics. It's difficult to mount optics. It's difficult to mount lights. You're like, freaking hose clamps, duct tape, baby.
Duct tape, bro.
You know what I mean? Zip ties, whatever. Don't let this shit come off. Dummy cord everything. I still see sometimes guys will dummy cord their stuff, and I'm like, I get it, man. Your shit can still come off. I'm like, back in the day, this is an old guy. Don't yet dummy cord everything because literally things were probably going to fall off
right. Because
things were not effectively attached. All your gear, the old, you know, LVs and stuff, like all that shit, you had to be freaking dummy corded because.
Never had an Alice clip come undone.
Yeah, right. Alice clip, it just randomly just.
Yeah, they just a little spring just walk just up.
You're like, walk out and you're like, my pouch is halfway hanging off. Shit.
What about canteen?
But
oh, damn it.
That, and then you have to steal someone else's canteen, and that's, you know, that's
it sucks, especially if you get caught. Yeah. It's just a mess.
Well, remember, I mean, technically you're not stealing it, right? You're just trying to get your shit.
It's called reacquiring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, stealing. I'm strategically transporting equipment to an alternate location.
Right.
It's a tactical acquisition.
Like from your stuff to my stuff. That's transporting it over here.
Or you could call it cross-loading. Like, hey, man, I see you're having trouble. Let me carry that canteen for you.
Cross-load your shit without your knowledge.
All right. So when you think about red dots, I mean, I think that covers a lot of basic red dot concepts.
Well, and cost. Cost is the one thing that you always have to answer.
You're absolutely right, man.
You know, for any type of optic, yes, I agree with you have to decide what your primary use of your carbine, your rifle, whatever is going to be. But then you also have to take a step back and look at your budget.
And what's realistic, man? Like,
yeah.
Like, what's actually
Do I need realistic? A Night Force or US Optics? No. Because those particular optics are designed to perform at a level that I will never perform at, right? I would never use one of those to its maximum capabilities for the most part, right? Because that's not the lifestyle that I lead.
Right.
Well, my MRO, it's great. It works perfectly for me. It fits on my rifle.
Think about the MRO, though, man. Because it's got that Trigicon name, man. When it first came out, it was freaking expensive. Now, these days, they brought the price down significantly. But the original MSRP on the MRO was more than the freaking 8.21H ones, right? I mean, they were like $600 optics or something like that, which is insane for red dot, in my opinion. Especially when you were looking at, you know, comp M2s and whatever, they were freaking $300.
Yeah.
So.
Or the Aimpoint Pros.
Yeah. Or
the Aimpoint Pro is what really drove the market down.
It did. That's what drove the market down in the MRO, I think. So think about even the MRO. Do you, in the way that you use your rifle today, need an MRO?
No.
Do you need the quality of an MRO? Now, if you were gonna get deployed again, would you need the quality MRO? Yeah, I would say you would. Like, because if I'm going into an environment, if I'm going into an environment where I'm gonna be beating the shit out of this gun
right.
a lot, and not right. even me like with hammer smash shit, but like
it's gonna get used and beat up.
Just from transportation.
It's gonna bounce around, right? It's getting knocked around a freaking Humvee or whatever. Like, all those things are important. If I'm going to be in that environment, do I need that on my primary gun at home? I mean, if you have the money, yeah, sure, go for it.
Yeah,
but if you're trying to prioritize funds,
yeah,
you know, do you need that? Because people, well, how much is your life worth? A lot more than a red dot. So don't even bring that bullshit.
It's like
into
I don't need an SBR, right?
Whoa,
that.
Here we go. Didn't we just do this?
We just did that episode. Yeah.
Needs and wants show.
But yeah, I get what you're saying.
You see what I mean? That's the point. Yeah,
that's
of what I'm getting.
The legitimate thing
is: do you even need that? I mean, wouldn't a primary arm be just fine?
Yeah.
I mean, shit. Right
for the way I use my rifle, absolutely.
Right out here on the table, a freaking AR 500 armor. They got some clearance shit. They got a primary arms clearance red dot out there. I think for like $120 or something. I mean. That's a good optic for the majority of people, even that honestly we train or in the way that they use their rifles. They may come and train with us. They may not shoot that rifle again for weeks, maybe months, maybe ever. You know, I mean, that's the reality of things, right? The majority of people we know as gun owners do not really shoot that much. Now, people in our group, in our tribe, they shoot way more than the average person. I mean, fucking around on the range yesterday – James and I probably shot more than just between teaching and kind of messing around between defensive handgun and low light, no light. We probably shot more rounds than the average pistol shooter shoots annually.
Yeah, in a year.
And we weren't in a class. Like, obviously, our students are going to do that because they fired 400 or 500 rounds yesterday. But, like, just from our perspective, we probably shot more just freaking messing around than the average CCW shoots in a year. That's reality. Yeah. Right.
I would say 90% of 95% of people who own guns, we shot more than that.
Yeah,
most people don't
train. Yeah, for sure.
And so because of that, because that's how we have to look at it, again, you go back to the concept of what's the quality you really need? Well, look, man, if you have the money, buy the best shit and the story, then call it a day, then it's a variable you can remove. But if you're like trying to scrape together enough money to put optics on your gun, and that's a reality for some people, there's nothing wrong with that. If you're trying to scrape this money together,
get the best you can afford.
And get a better mount. Yeah. Right? Like spring for the ADM mount and the cheaper, you know, Vortex Spark AR, which by the way is a badass freaking red dot. Right? But like get that, but a really good ADM mount for it. Or something like that. You know what I mean? As opposed to like, well, I'm going to blow all my money on this good optic and then this shit mount, and the mount doesn't work as well, or freaking rattles loose, or it doesn't mount on straight, or whatever it is. You know, those are problems that you can have in optics mount. So get a better optics mount. You could always put a better optic on a better optics mount later.
It's a true story.
You know what I mean? And I would rather have that, rather have a good foundation. You know, that mount, the foundation of your optic. So we don't spend the whole show on red dots. Let's take a look at some other options. Fixed power stuff like ACOGs, prism sights. Now we're going to get really into reticles, and there's so many different options. And there's red reticles, and there's green reticles, and there's range finding reticles, and they actually have mil and minute reticles in there. There's a lot of different options. You see that face now?
Jesus,
I almost had to sneeze like that. If I'm going to get into an optic like that, a fixed power means, for me, outside the structure.
For sure.
If I'm going fixed power, 3, 4, whatever, outside the structure, I'm going to need this for a field use.
And I'm not a huge fan of fixed.
I'm also not a huge fan of fixed. No, it's not.
To me, it's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, you're like, I have magnification, but probably not what I need.
And or I have too much magnification.
Too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not really what I need, right? Now, I grew up shooting fixed 4-power scopes, right? Bushnell, cheap Nikon, cheap optics, you know what I mean? My dad laughs now at the optics I own. You know what I mean? Every time he looks through something, he's like, it's amazing. How much does this cost? I tell my dad, I'm like,
don't worry about it, Dad.
More than the scopes we used as a kid, Bob. You know what I mean? But he looks at them, and because back then, it was like, we didn't need anything more, dude. We were shooting elk and deer, coyotes.
Inside 100 yards.
100. I mean, dude, 200 yards for us was a long shot. We used to zero at 100, and my dad would put a paper plate up at 200, and all we had to be able to do was put some rounds on the paper plate. It's like, all of our rounds, not just a round, but it's like, we're going to fire a 3-round group at 200 as our confirmation. So it's like, we would shoot 4 rounds at first, right? Cold bore and 3 more rounds, to check where we were on the target. We would make an adjustment. We would very specifically adjust our optics for that adjustment. We would fire 3 more rounds to confirm on paper. Then we were good. Then we would go put a paper plate at 200 yards and we would fire 3 rounds there. That's 10 rounds. That's a half a box of ammunition back then. It's a lot of freaking rounds. As a kid, that was a shoulder pounding afternoon. You know what I mean? That's a lot of freaking recoil because we're shooting old traditional rifles, you know? And we did most of that work with 4-power scopes because 200 yards, we were like, yeah, I mean, we can hit at 200 yards is really all we were proving to ourselves. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, it was like, oh, man. Literally last year when I killed my deer at 190 yards, which is still not that far, that is the farthest I've ever killed a big game animal.
What was Garrett's?
640 yards. Jesus. That was insane. That was a hell of a shot. That was a perfect shot. And that whole
thing. I mean, that's like way situation. Outside the realm of how you normally hunt.
Way outside the realm of how we normally hunt. But the point is that a fixed 4-power scope is all we need. I remember when my old man got a 3-9. You got a 3-9.
Oh my God!
Nikon Pro Staff, and I was like, 9-power, Dad, you're gonna be a sniper. You know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh,
that's insane. Power?
You know, and I remember I would look through it. He had this Ruger Model 1 or Number 1, I think they call it Ruger Number 1, in 30-06. So it's just a falling block action, single shot. And then he put this 3x9 Nikon Pro Staff on that thing. And holy shit.
Man, I can see all the way over to the next county.
Oh my gosh, man. I remember I would get behind that gun, and it wasn't my gun, it was Dad's gun, but I would shoot it, turn that thing all the way up to 9 pounds, and be like, oh my God, is this what it's like? You know, this is amazing. And now when you do that,
you're like, oh my God, why is everything so shaky?
And now, yeah, if I turn up the full power, and I was like 27 or some bullshit, Now you literally can't see in the next county. But fixed four power is what we did most of our work on. But again, most everything was relatively close, you know, 100 yards, 150 yards maybe. So fixed power is limiting. You know, we also weren't typically shooting animals at 20 yards.
Right.
Or 10 or 30. So since we're talking about, you know, kind of go-to guns that are going to fit a variety of needs, I'm a big fan of low-power variables.
It's where the money's at.
One to fours, one to sixes, even two to sevens. You know, that two is still a low enough power that it works pretty damn well.
It does. Screws me up.
Does it?
Yeah, I've tried. I've tried the one and a halves, and it's there's just enough there that it distorts.
I like a true one power, and there's not a lot of optic companies that are making a true one power, meaning that when you turn it down to one, it's actually disengaging from the power range, right? So it's a true no-shit one power. You're looking straight for those pieces of glass.
Yeah.
Then you start turning up. Then it re-engages the power ring and starts magnifying. Most optics, when you turn down to one power, you're still looking through the powered optic, right? It's just really low power, like 1.1, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but you're still technically looking through it. The upside to LPVOs, low power variable optics, is obviously the variable magnification.
Yep.
Allows me positive target ID, allows me more precise hits at close range. It's not just for distance. It does allow me to reach out for distance.
Yep.
It does allow me to see things farther away, just general observation. It's really beneficial reticle-wise because you're typically going to find more traditional mil and minute type reticles.
Yeah, pick a reticle.
There's a thousand other reticles. If it's an ACOG, it's on a low-power variable.
Yep.
You want a red dot, they got a low-power variable for that.
Yep.
There's a lot of different low-power variables. You can even get a first focal plane low-power variable, which I'm not a huge fan of outside of the Trigicon. They did a pretty damn good job, and SIG did a pretty good job with theirs as well. I tried the Bushnell Elite series, which I like the Elite series. They totally fucked it up. No one else has really done a good first focal plane low power variable. But Trigicon, SIG, they did do a good job of that. Everyone else, you know, Vortex, obviously big Vortex fans, you know, Leupold fans, you know, Night Force, all those guys are badass. In fact, you know what? The Night Force, let me take that back too. The Night Force, the NX-8, shit, I don't remember what it is. I don't remember all these damn models all the time. But the new first focal plane Night Force is also pretty badass as well. Yeah, they did a really good job at that. But there's so many different reticle options. Magnification, you can get 1 to 8, 1 to 6, 1 to 4, 2 to 7. All those would be considered low power variables and really, really good choices for even close range. What I like about the Vortex Viper Gen 2, PSC Gen 2, and the razors that I use is that you can start a red dot on.
Yep.
So I'm looking through the optic. I don't want to use the crosshairs of any kind. I'm up close and personal running fast. I literally just turn the red dot on. Yep. On one of its 11 fucking intensity settings, all right, which I still don't give a shit about, or 10 or whatever they have.
Yeah.
But that being said, I do like that capability to turn a red dot on. I've used that so many times. So I do like that option. The downside to low power variable optics, all right,
and size still, and weight.
Size and weight, but for me, even more than that.
Mm.
The biggest downside to LPVOs is you have to be directly behind the glass because there's a parallax issue.
Right.
So now, if I'm off-centered a little bit and I can see scope shadow, I am suffering from parallax, and there's a pretty good chance I'm going to miss if I'm shooting at distance at all. If I'm shooting from unconventional positions, LPVOs are harder to shoot from. And then certainly size and weight.
Yeah, size and weight is huge, because I had one on my SBR for a long time.
Yes, you did, yeah.
And I thought it was a great optic. And then I got the thing, and I was like, God, this rifle just keeps getting heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. That's not what this rifle is for.
Right.
This rifle is for small, fast, inside my house type stuff. I ended up going back to a traditional red dot from it. So I like them. I'm actually in the market to pick up another one for my 16-inch gun.
Yeah.
So.
And so I use a lot of low-power variable optics. I use them on a lot of my guns, my hunting guns, my competition guns. I use them a lot. I think they're awesome. I think they're probably the best option for the majority of people out there who are looking for a kind of do-it-all
all-around gun. Yeah.
You know, like, I want this for competition. I want this for home defense. I want this for whatever. So that's kind of, you know, low-power variable optics in a nutshell, so to speak. Again, good mounts are important.
Always.
Where you mount them is important. Make sure you have the appropriate eye relief, which, again, is, you know, why – hard and unconventional positions because of eye relief issues, which you don't have in red dots. there's also this idea of like, what about mounting 45 degrees something? Now, back in the day, another back in the day story, the original, some of the original ACOGs also had the dock optic on it, right?
On top.
And the dock optic was mounted on top of the ACOG, a tiny little reflex red dot. The idea there was, if I, boom, kick in a door, need to transition, literally chin weld the stock. Literal technique is to put your chin on the stock and look directly through the freaking dock optic. Now you have that capability to go transition from a 4 or 6 power ACOG up to a red dot for close range chin. Of course, what everybody found out very quickly was, one, that sucked because it was way too high. And two, that high overbore was difficult to make happen under stressful conditions if we wanted to make more precision shots. It's a significant amount of holdover. Not only was it difficult to get the mount on it for your body's alignment, but it was also really shitty high overbore. So then everyone took to, okay, let's do this from a 45-degree offset. We'll mount it back down toward the rail to where we rotate the gun at a 45-degree angle. And now there's iron sights that are a 45-degree angle. There's red dots that are a 45-degree angle. I mean, there's all kinds of things that are all a 45-degree angle. Now, there is a time and a place for that. You know, that's a big competition advantage. A lot of guys are doing that kind of stuff in competition. Me personally, there's only literally only been one competition that I've run where I was like, damn, I wish I had that.
Yeah.
Other than that, there has just not been anything that I've run where I'm like, man, I wish I had that. Even defensively or whatever, for me, it's a moot point. I don't really care about the 45-degree offset size. I'll say most people who run them don't use them really that much. There's a couple guys I know who run them. They run them well. We have some students who run them. They run them well. We have a student who's got a primary carbine. This guy freaking knows everything there is to know about this carbine, man. He's brought it through field carbine, defensive carbine, coyote clinic, everything. He's brought this gun through all of our classes, and he runs a variable optic up top, like an actual magnified optic. I don't remember what it is. It's like a, I want to say it's like a 4 to 16 or something like that. And he runs a 45-degree red dot. And he runs it like a fucking champ because this is his primary gun.
Yeah, that's his gun.
He uses it for everything. So in that kind of setup, that's a little bit more unique, right?
Yeah.
That's atypical of your casual user. So, you know, if you want to run 45,
maximizing the use of his gun.
Yeah, he's also saying, dude, I want one gun that kind of does everything for me in the carbine world, and it does it. So most of the time what I find with people is they put them on there, they get snagged on shit, they don't use them, they end up taking them off. But certainly nothing wrong with them. So from selecting, you know, to start with, again, you got to get contextual about what you're going to do with the gun. You're going to be inside and close range, you're going to be outside. For your standard, let's paint everyone a broad stroke. If I was home defense, red dot.
For sure.
Standard red dot.
Yep.
Maybe an EOTech type reticle.
Maybe.
If I was cop.
Low power.
In a metropolitan area.
Magnifier with a red dot.
Red dot with a magnifier.
Oh, yeah.
If I was a sheriff's deputy, border patrol agent, etc., low power variable 100%.
Yep.
Maybe throw in a 45-degree red dot if I had a certain situation that necessitated it, such as I might need to do some structural work with this guy.
I feel like especially border patrol.
Yeah. Especially guys who are out in the open.
Yeah.
If I was hunter with an AR, now I'm probably looking at something more like 3 to 15. Dial it back down to low power, but still have the capability to get higher up there, and probably have a better option of reticles that are going to allow me for more distance shooting. As a competitor, I would probably stick with my low power variable optic and again consider a 45-degree offset depending on what I need
to
shoot.
Your style of competition.
I shoot a lot of action matches, 3-gun, 2-gun, adventure races, stuff like that. I got a 1-6. I'm never going to disappoint. If I was standard recreational shooter, LPVO.
Yeah.
Yeah. Low power variable optic. Unless I was very weight concerned. And then I just stick with a red dot. If my recreational shooting was going to take me outside of 100 yards.
Yeah.
If most of my shit is 25 to 50 yards, red dot. If everything I'm doing for the most part is inside of 100, red dot. If everything I'm doing is most likely outside of that. If I was going to deploy to Afghanistan today, low power radar.
For sure.
That's what I would want. That's absolutely what I would want. And I would quite honestly probably start considering like one of the 2.5 to 10s or something like that. If I was going to Iraqistan today, I'd probably want a red dot 95.
Depending on where I was going in Iraq, but
if I was going to end up in more urban parts,
if
right?
If I were going anywhere over to that area, I would take a red dot.
I would take an LPVO as a default. If I didn't know what I was going to walk into with a carbine, if someone was like, you need to prep this carbine for as many circumstances as possible, select from this table of optics, I would go for a low power radar optic.
Yeah, for 100%. Sure.
Yeah.
Even with its limitations, I would go for a low power radar optic. And I have shot them so much that I can tell you they are perfectly capable of close ranges. You have to, like anything else, you got to practice with. Yeah. You got to understand what they're capable of. Anything else to add about optics, John?
No, that pretty much covered it. Your depth of knowledge on that is significantly deeper than mine.
Oh, man. And that's just skimming the surface, guys. Yeah, dude. On optics selection. Yeah,
dude, there's a ton. You can get into some real, real good minutia. I just figure out your context and go from there. Figure out your context, figure out your budget. Those are your top two tips for
a big deal,
pretty much everything that you're going to do in this life, in this industry. Yeah. You got to figure out context, what you're doing and how much you want to spend.
James, anything to add?
No, you're like you said, your depth of knowledge is far surpassed mine. So
won't be for that way for long. I would teach you all kinds.
Yeah, I'm learning.
All right, guys, thank you for listening this week. Remember, we're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. You can check out all the other shows that the Heroes Media Group has. And if you're listening to our show and you haven't even looked up Heroes Media Group, please take a couple minutes today or tomorrow or whenever and do that.
Yeah.
All right. Adam Bird, who owns Heroes Media Group and started Heroes Media Group, is the reason that the Arms Room exists. So please support Heroes Media Group and go over and check out what they've got going on. Right? They've got a lot of great shows. They've got all kinds of professional services they offer. Look at what Adam does. Look at his show, The Decision Hour. Really good stuff, man. You know, make sure you guys support Heroes Media Group. It's important to us that you do it. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. And remember, you can bring us out to train with you. If stuff like this is interesting to you and you want to bring us out to your area, shoot us an email, info@trainingaz.com, and we'll tell you all about hosting us in your area. It's really not that hard and you train for free, so there's definitely a benefit. Next week, we're going to kind of be talking about guns again. Not guns, but carbines again, specifically. How to set up your truck gun, and do you really need a truck gun? And we're going to talk about that next week. Until then, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.